In this class, we're going to talk about the tools that you'll need in order to launch your career reinvention. Now, having your toolkit ready helps you to jumpstart the momentum of your search. So having things like a resume and your cover letter and your elevator pitch all together will help you introduce yourself to a contact. It'll help you tell prospective employers in your target career what you're all about. Will assist you in piquing the interest of a potential hiring manager, or having everything ready will help you respond quickly to an interesting job listing. Preparing your reinvention tools ensures that you're able to quickly follow up on every opportunity that comes your way. So let's dive right in. Now, there are three main tools that you'll use to reinvent your career: a resume, a cover letter, and a 30-second elevator pitch. Let's get started with the resume first. The most important thing to remember about your resume is that it's a sales and marketing document whose purpose is to make people pick up the phone and call you. This is crucial because many people think that a resume is an exhaustive list of every job they've ever had since high school. But don't make this mistake. Too many people put in far too many details, but understand that your resume is not meant to be a complete written history of all the jobs you've ever had. Just like every good sales and marketing document, shortness, brevity is crucial. The goal is to have somebody be able to glance at your resume for 10 seconds and say, call this person back. So keep in mind that your resume really is a sales and marketing document and that it's designed to make people want to pick up the phone and call you. Now, I'm going to assume that you know the basic structure of a standard chronological resume. If not, just go online. There are lots of good books and articles on the topic. What I'm going to talk about in terms of the resume from a career reinvention perspective is the main question that you'll need to think about. If I want to make a change to a different career, how should I rework my resume? Because this is really the key thing. Now, when it comes to career reinvention, here are the sections that you'll need to pay attention to. The first section is the objective. Interestingly enough, from a career reinvention standpoint, the objective is generally not helpful. Why is that? It's because you're looking to make a change from what you've done in the past. And so if your objective doesn't match your background, it really becomes meaningless. Therefore, I recommend dispensing with this section. If you consider that your resume is a piece of real estate, everything that's contained on it has value, and you want to make sure that you use that real estate wisely. So an objective, because again, if you have something on there that doesn't match all of your job history, doesn't help you in getting to where you want to go, it's not a good use of your real estate. So remove it. Now, the next section that is important from a career reinvention standpoint that some people use but not a lot of people use is the candidate profile or a summary of qualifications. This piece is really, really critical, and I just can't stress enough how helpful this is from a career reinvention standpoint. It's very, very valuable because you can use this section to provide a description of the qualities, your skills, and your talents, and the summary can be shaped to target your new career. Because it really consists of about 4 or 5 bullet points, you have more room to use to demonstrate how what you've done, your experience, can be shaped and made relevant to where it is you're looking to head. Now, what you want to do for this section is to use language that really creates a picture of you as a candidate, keeping in mind that the stronger the visual image, the more effective this section is going to be. What does this mean? Let me give you some examples. An example bullet point for a candidate profile could be something like media professional with 15 years of experience. Now that's very clear, it states the facts, but it's pretty boring. It does what it needs to do, it's utilitarian, but it doesn't excite us. Try this one on for size. Seasoned media executive who has built businesses from the ground up. Same idea, but now it creates an exciting go-getter image. You have a visual picture of this person, the seasoned media executive who's built businesses from the ground up. All of a sudden, you get a feeling for what kind of candidate this person is. Now, given the difference between the media professional with 15 years of experience or the seasoned media executive who's built businesses from the ground up, which person do you think the hiring manager is going to call? Obviously, there's no contest. So again, think about the difference between those two. Think about the visual words, the strong, active words that were used in the second example, and keep all of that in mind when you begin to think about what you want to put in your candidate profile section. Now, here's a common trap that a lot of people fall into with this section. They end up putting job functions up in those bullet points. Job functions like edits children books or responsible for managing sales team. Don't do this. Your candidate profile is a section to highlight your skills and your talents, not where you paste a list of every job function that you've ever done. Now, on a side note, keep in mind that for visual presence, this list should be a bullet point list that catches the eye, and it's best to have each bullet point be one line, really maximum 1.5 lines, no more than that. If it's getting to be longer than that, then you need to edit down. 4 or 5 statements for this section is standard. And if you have 5 statements, if you can come up with 5 very visual, very targeted statements, it will begin to create a very strong picture of you as a candidate. Take a moment to go to your workbook to brainstorm some statements that you could use for your candidate profile section. Focus on using the active, exciting words and pay attention to creating the kind of visual picture that we talk about. As writers say, show, don't tell. Let's move on to the next piece of the resume that's really important from a career reinvention perspective, and that would be accomplishments. It's amazing to me always how many people forget to add their successes into each job listing. They really don't think to add in their accomplishments. But from a career reinvention perspective, however, accomplishments are crucial because they show potential employers that you have a history of creating positive and tangible results. Now, the other benefit is that when you identify your accomplishments, when you go through the process of looking at the particular jobs that you've had and identifying accomplishments for each one of those, you can analyze what skills and talents it took to achieve those accomplishments. Now, what that will do for you is it will help you identify the adaptive and the transferable skills that we mentioned in the Identifying Your Dream Career session so that you'll know which accomplishments will help you demonstrate to potential employers that you have the skills and talents necessary to be successful in your target career. So again, going through the process of identifying your accomplishments, then you can take a look at what skills and talents allowed you to make those accomplishments happen, and then now you'll see, you'll identify the adaptive skills, you'll identify the transferable skills, and now you'll know which accomplishments are going to be the most impactful to present to your target employers in your new career. Now, it can be a challenge, however, to come up with your accomplishments. This tends to be a very difficult spot for a lot of people because they're not used to thinking about what their accomplishments are. Using the acronym PAR, P-A-R, to analyze each job can help you identify what your accomplishments are. Now, let's talk about PAR. PAR, P stands for problem. This is where you identify the problem or the opportunity or the challenge of the position. By pinpointing one of those three things, your problem, your opportunity, or your challenge, then you can define the A, which is the action that you took to solve that. So first you identify your problem, your opportunity, or your challenge. Then you identify the action that you took to solve the problem or to overcome the challenge or to maximize the opportunity that was put in front of you. Once you've identified the actions you took, you can then summarize the R. And the R is the result. Your results show exactly what you accomplished in response to that problem, that opportunity, or that challenge. And these results then become your list of accomplishments. So again, identify P, the problem, or the opportunity, or the challenge, then identify the action that you took in response to each one of those, and then identify the results. The results become your accomplishments. Now, keep in mind that your accomplishments should satisfy or must satisfy one of these three characteristics. Your accomplishments should either be specific, and what that means, for example, I'll give you an example of a specific accomplishment, launched video product line in Europe. Very specific, you know what kind of products were launched, where they were launched, or something like implemented financial database for all branch divisions, or created franchising guidelines for retail store division. Again, very specific, financial database, branch divisions, or franchising guidelines for retail store division. If your accomplishment is not specific, it should be identifiable. That's number two. Identifiable means having a name that people would recognize. Managed accounts for Nike, Adidas, and Reebok, for example, or contributed articles to Travel and Leisure, Gourmet, or New York Magazine. These are identifiable accomplishments. Or even something like presented internet sales tax recommendations to Congress in 2004. Again, names that have an impact that your potential employer, in glancing at, would say, oh, okay, this, I recognize this. Now, if your accomplishment is not specific or identifiable, it should be quantifiable. That's number three. Something like increase sales by 20% in the first year. Very easy, numbers attached with it. Or put on a conference for over 50 outside distributors. Instead of saying something like put on conferences for distributors, which becomes a very bland statement, make it quantifiable, over 50 outside distributors. Or brought in new client billings worth $3.5 million in 2003. So again, your accomplishments must satisfy one of three characteristics. Should either be specific, or they should be identifiable, or they should be quantifiable. Now clearly, depending upon the job, you'll have one or two or three of these characteristics for each job. You'll be able to identify an accomplishment that's quantifiable perhaps for one job, or identifiable for another job. Maybe you had a list of very high profile clients that you worked with, or specific in a third position, or you might have one for each in one particular job. So again, mix and match. Don't get caught up in, oh, I don't have any identifiable ones. Pull from each as it's natural to your background. Another point from a visual real estate standpoint is that your accomplishments should always be bulleted, because bullets from a visual standpoint draw the eye. And so you want to use them judiciously. It is not a good thing to have an all bullet point resume. Why not? Because when you glance at that resume, it's nearly impossible to tell what's important and what's not. So the person really has to read through each of the bullets to find out what are the good nuggets. And something like, oh, created filing system for the office has the same visual weight as won a Pulitzer Prize in 2005. So you can see the problem with that, because you're only going to get maybe a 10-second glance at a resume in order for the person to see whether or not they should read any further. You know, they've got a stack of maybe 100 resumes on their desk, and they're really just going through. So you want to be really smart and think about this from the hiring manager's perspective, what's going to make it really easy for them to get the information that they need immediately and make you stand out. So this means that bullet points are used very sparingly, and they're only used for the most important of things, your summary of qualifications and then your accomplishments, making sure then that that will stand out. So for your job description, you use that, just a narrative paragraph for that. Do not waste bullet points on job descriptions. Now go to your workbook and take a moment to identify three or four accomplishments for your most recent job. But if you've been there for less than a year, one or two is sufficient. And for your previous positions, look to identify two or three accomplishments, and that'll be enough. All right, let's talk about some other reinvention resume strategies. Language is really an important piece of your reinvention resume. And again, this is not something that is generally discussed in a standard resume book. But each industry has its own language, and it's important to identify the language of your target career and to use that in your materials. Now, an easy way to become familiar with the language of your new field is by reading the trade publications. And what you'll want to do is you'll want to include the new language wherever you can. And the only exception to this rule would be with your job titles. If your current or your past positions are called something else in your target career, don't change your job title. Just use the new language in the description of each job function. So what you'll want to do is to basically identify the keywords. For example, when I was making a transition from Wall Street to the entertainment field, my previous position on Wall Street was called agency and reseller sales. And reseller sales meant that we went out and sold our content to third-party partners. Well, within the entertainment field, that was called distribution. I couldn't change my job title. That was what my job title was. But I made sure in my description of what I did that I said handled third-party distribution relationships. So that's an example of using the language of an industry so that when a target hiring manager looks at your materials, it makes sense. The same theory is when you go to a foreign country and you want to make yourself understood, you learn to speak a few words of the language. Same thing. And this is a really important psychological point because part of getting somebody to take a chance on you is making them feel comfortable with the fact that you'll be able to make the transition. And one of the ways that you do that is by speaking their language. Another reinvention resume strategy is to use volunteer or other unpaid work to your advantage. If your current job doesn't provide you with the opportunity to develop the skills that you'll need for your target career, then you may have to draw on skills that you develop through volunteering or some other unpaid work. The way you'll want to deal with this from a resume perspective is to create an identifying section on your resume called volunteer, or you can call it other experience. Or if you're an aspiring writer, you might call this articles and a publication. Then you'll record your relevant experience the same way as you would a job, including a summary description of what you did in a narrative paragraph format and a list of bullet point accomplishments. Also, realize that you can include the skills and the talents that you developed through volunteerism and unpaid work in your summary of qualifications or your candidate profile. But make sure that you have quantifiable achievements, identifiable achievements, or specific achievements to back it up. So if you're going to claim those skills and talents from that section, from your volunteer or your other experience section, make sure that you have something to back it up. Another important thing, the most important thing regarding your resume from a reinvention standpoint, is that you want to tell the truth. Now, while it's good to be creative when you're reinventing your career, and in fact, it's necessary, be careful that you don't fall into the trap of being creative in a way that crosses the line. In other words, you really want to be honest about your skills and your talents and your qualifications. Don't misrepresent or embellish what you've done. A good rule of thumb to follow is this. Don't include any statements or accomplishments or activities that can't somehow be independently verified. This is critical because if you claim to more than what you can actually support, one of two things will happen. You'll land the job, but then it'll be difficult for you to actually succeed because you've extended yourself beyond what you can actually claim from your background, or your target employer will learn through checking that, in fact, you don't have the experience that you've claimed, and then you've begun to create a bad name for yourself in your target industry. So, again, it's always important to be truthful and to never cross the line and make sure that whatever you claim to can be independently verified. So if an employer picks up a phone and calls somebody from your old life and says, does this person have this skill, this talent, this quality, that person will say yes. Let's talk about the second reinvention tool that you'll need, which is your cover letter. What's the goal of a cover letter? Well, a cover letter, like your resume, is a sales and marketing document that's designed to make people want to call you. It is not a long dissertation on why you're looking for a new job, nor is it a repeat of all the content on your resume. These are two common areas that people make mistakes. The cover letter is a prime opportunity to set yourself apart. And if you take the time to craft an interesting and compelling letter, you're greatly going to increase your response rate. A lot of people don't send cover letters, especially in this day and age with the advent of email and people just email their resumes and they just send a little line like, here's my resume. And here's the thing. The cover letter is your opportunity to show that you are a standout candidate that has really relevant experience. And if you take the time to demonstrate that to a target employer, you will stand out above 98% of the crowd that just sent a resume. And again, this is about making yourself stand out so that you increase your chances of a callback. So use the cover letter to your advantage. The requirements of a reinvention cover letter are this. Your cover letter, when you are reinventing your career, must explain how your background is relevant to your target career. I'm going to state that again because it is such an important point. Your cover letter must explain how your background is relevant to your target career. Do not leave this for your prospective employer to figure out. If you can't explain how what you've done applies to their situation, they're certainly not going to be able to understand it themselves, and they're not going to take the time to figure it out. This is a quick way to end up in the no thanks pile. Now, what does this mean? A reinvention cover letter should really clearly describe how your skills and talents are going to be useful in helping your prospective employer achieve their goals. This is what it means to say that your background is relevant to their situation. So you want to describe how your skills and talents that you developed in your previous career are going to be useful to helping your prospective employer achieve what they need to achieve for their business. To do this, you're going to describe your background in a different way. You list the job functions that are relevant to what your target employer is seeking, and you'll use the PAR acronym to identify an accomplishment or two from your past that highlights the adaptive or the transferable skill that will translate to your target career. So what you're doing is you're pulling out the relevant job functions that are similar to your target career, and you're pulling out the accomplishments after you've analyzed them using the PAR and you've identified those adaptive or transferable skills that are relevant in your new target career. You're going to pull out those accomplishments and you'll highlight those so that it will show to your target employer, hey, I've got the skills and talents and a record of success that shows that I have these skills and talents and they're applicable in your role as well. Some other things to remember when you're crafting your cover letter. First of all, keep it short. No more than one page maximum. Again, prospective employers get stacks of resumes. They don't have time to read a long treatise. Number two, close the deal. This means asking for the interview, and if it's not a blind posting, tell the prospect that you'll follow up with them. You should be driving the process whenever possible. Do not make the mistake of saying, oh, I'll just wait to hear from you, unless it's a blind posting. But if it's a blind posting, then say, I'm confident and I look forward to an interview. Be very positive, very proactive in all ways. Another point to remember when you're crafting your cover letter is to stay away from opinion statements. Do not make statements about your work that are basically a matter of opinion. For example, don't say, wrote witty and hilarious copy for 10 websites. Witty and hilarious are terms that depend upon your viewpoint. They're opinion statements. Wrote copy for 10 websites is a statement of fact. So again, stay away from these types of opinion, value judgments that are open to interpretation. Just stick to the facts. Another point that we mentioned earlier with the resume piece is to use the language of the target industry. As with the resume, include the terms that are commonly used, or if you're responding to an advertised position, include some of the language of the listing. Another way, it's called mirroring. Don't, however, just copy every phrase from the posting in the letter. So this is going to make you look unimaginative. What you're going to want to do is to take a few key phrases, look for what seems to be their hot buttons, and weave them into your letter. Now, the last and most important strategy from crafting a reinvention cover letter is this, and it's to make your letter about them, not about you. I'd have to say that this is the number one error that job seekers make across the board, career reinvention or not, is making the letter about themselves rather than thinking about the employer and making the letter about what they can do for the employer. This is a very subtle problem, this making your letter about them, not about you. Because you're pitching them and you're pitching them on yourself, you really can't avoid talking about yourself. What you have to watch out for, though, is that you don't fall into the I trap, where your whole letter is focused on what you want. Red flag danger statements might include, I'm looking for a change. I would love to work for your company. This position sounds like a great opportunity for me. These types of sentences are danger phrases. They really raise the big red flags to the hiring managers because they indicate that the candidate's more concerned about getting their needs met rather than helping the company achieve their goals. And the bottom line is, no matter why you're making this career reinvention move, in order for somebody to hire you, you have to demonstrate that you're there to meet their goals. They're not there to satisfy your personal needs. So to avoid this trap in your reinvention cover letter, you'll need to change your phrasing to statements like, I'd like to discuss how my skills and talents can help you, or I'm confident I can add value to your team, or I'd like to make a contribution to your mission. You can see that even though you might start off with the word I, you always end up with them. Your I is in context of what you can do for them. So make your letter about them, not about you. Now, for your workbook exercise, what you'll want to do is go online and find an interesting job posting. And take a moment to then write a draft cover letter. Actually, longer than a moment because this is a craft. So take some time to write a draft cover letter using the cover letter techniques that we spoke about, mirroring the language, making your letter about them and what they're looking to achieve for their role, not about you, using the PAR acronym to identify accomplishments and skills and adaptive talents that are transferable, going through all of that. Let's talk about reinvention tool number 3, your elevator pitch. What's an elevator pitch? It's a 30-second story that tells people who you are and what you do. 30 seconds because that's the amount of time that you have to impress a hot prospect when you're riding in an elevator, so hence the name. Now, the goal of an elevator pitch is to provoke interest so that your target, a potential client or a hiring company or your prospect, will keep talking to you. From a career reinvention standpoint, you don't tell people what you used to do or what you're currently doing. You must craft an elevator pitch that reflects the story of where you want to go, your new career, rather than where you've been. Now, the way around this is to start by saying, say for example, if you're a lawyer, I'm a lawyer, but I'm making a transition. So you acknowledge that you've done something, but then you immediately move into where you're headed rather than only focusing on what you're currently doing. Because, again, from a career reinvention standpoint, it's about piquing interest for where you want to head rather than what you're currently doing. Now, an elevator pitch is usually 1 to 3 sentences long, and it always contains the following 4 elements. Number 1, what you do. And that's just a quick summary of yourself as a candidate. Number 2, who you do it for. The types of firms or individuals that would find your services helpful or your target. Number 3 is what you value you bring. The benefit that a potential firm would experience by hiring you. And then number 4 is how you want to be perceived by the target. And these are the qualities that you want to be known for. Any elevator pitch that you craft must be able to pass what's called the so what test. This means that your story must be interesting or compelling or useful enough that your target prospect can't say so what in response to your pitch. They feel compelled to ask and say, tell me more. Let's look at an example that I created when I wanted to leave Wall Street for the entertainment industry. My elevator pitch went like this. I'm a top-level deal negotiator for high-profile media companies. I'm a specialist in identifying and closing multi-million dollar joint ventures in overseas territories. Let's break this down to the four components of an elevator story. First point is what you do. So what did I do? I was a deal negotiator. That is how I identified it myself. Then the second component, who do you do this for? In my elevator pitch, who I did that for was high-profile media companies. Now, no, even though I was on Wall Street, the parent company of my Wall Street firm was a well-known media company, and this was an attractive point to entertainment firms who often own media outlets. So I used my background as I shaped it in a way that was attractive to my target market, and I claimed the media piece because I was doing deals with media firms, and we were owned by a media company. The third piece of the elevator pitch, which has to do with value, is that I brought the value of being able to identify and close multi-million dollar joint ventures. Very clear. So any entertainment firm that valued the ability to close and identify joint ventures, well, then I was putting myself right there in front of them. And the fourth piece of how I wanted to be perceived, the key qualities that I wanted to be known for, were top level and specialist. So this elevator pitch, which contained the four components, what I did, who I did it for, the value I brought, and how I wanted to be perceived, was crafted in a way that was interesting and compelling to the identified target market, entertainment companies that wanted to do overseas deals. That elevator pitch did, in fact, capture the attention of entertainment companies who wanted to go overseas, and I did end up landing the gig. So it's an important piece and a very useful piece to be able to work and to craft a very compelling elevator pitch. Take a moment in your workbook to think about what kind of elevator pitch you craft for your target career. And again, to identify the kinds of things that'll be interesting to your target market, you'll have done some research on what they want by looking at job postings and those kinds of things, and you'll have analyzed your background using the PAR to come up with accomplishments and the skills and talents that you have. So you will pull all of this together to craft an interesting and compelling elevator pitch. In closing, it's important to craft an effective reinvention toolkit, but keep in mind that this is a process that takes time. So don't stress out or feel that everything has to be perfect before you get started, because it doesn't. This is a process that will evolve, and you will continually work on your materials. As you begin networking and testing the market, which we're going to talk about in the next course, you're going to learn more information, and as you learn this information, you're going to use this to polish your tools. Just like all top craftsmen know, the highest quality tools get better over time, and this same principle will be true for your reinvention tools. Your resumes, your cover letters, your elevator pitch will get better over time as you gather information and shape them and craft them, use them to see what works, do more of what works, and over time you will end up with a very effective toolkit that will help you land your dream job. Okay, let me ask if there are any questions.
Yeah, I have a question.
Okay.
When do you actually use the elevator pitch?
You use the elevator pitch when you are out networking and somebody asks you what you do. So say, for example, you're out to dinner and somebody introduces you to somebody new, or you're at an event. Anytime you're out speaking to people, you'll want to use your elevator pitch. And this is also an important thing because it also helps you start shifting your image in the marketplace instead of being known for what you formerly do, you start to change people's minds and move them towards where it is you're headed. It's always something verbal. You can also use your elevator pitch actually as a very effective opening for your cover letter, saying something like, if you're interested in a top-level deal negotiator that can close multi-million dollar joint ventures in overseas markets, then we should talk. So it's a great opening statement to a cover letter as well. Great question. Okay. Other questions?
I know you talked about the summary of qualifications and accomplishments being the only parts that are bullet pointed.
Yes. Yes.
How exactly are you meant to describe your job for the actual day-to-day activities that you did? Those skills.
Okay. So the way that you describe your day-to-day job is you describe that in the form of a narrative paragraph. So you take two or three or four sentences for each job and describe what you did. And then underneath that paragraph, you have two or three or four, depending upon how many, bullets that pull out your accomplishments. So what this does is when you're glancing at the piece of paper, you'll see a paragraph, but you'll see three bullets. But now those three bullets will be very impactful. So they'll say something that really stands out, which will then make the person want to read the paragraph. So you're kind of playing with the psychology of somebody that doesn't have a lot of time, that only has a minute to glance, and drawing them into wanting to read your resume. Because if all you have are bullet points and the first three things they see are, like I said, created filing system, negotiated or did these managed three salespeople, if that's all they see, they'll move on to next because there's nothing that makes you stand out. There's nothing special in those three bullet points, and they've got a stack of 100 resumes. So they're just kind of going through. It's this myth that people actually read a resume. They don't. They glance at it to see if they should read the resume, and you're playing with that psychology.
Okay, so you would actually do bullet points for the summary qualifications, mm-hmm. the accomplishments, and then also within each job paragraph?
No. You would do bullet points for your summary of qualification, and then for each job, you would have your job title, and the place you worked, and then under that you would have a narrative paragraph that consists of about three or four sentences that described what you did, and then under that you would have three or four bullet points for the accomplishments for that job.
Okay, I see. So it goes under that way.
Yeah, it goes under that way. So then what happens is what they do is they glance at your summary of qualifications, and you've got this really strong and powerful series of statements about the kind of candidate you are. And then they glance at the bullet points that are all accomplishments, and they see some impressive accomplishments. Now, mentally, everything that they've glanced at just creates this very strong picture. They say, this is a person I want to read about further. You see how that psychology works?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Okay.
My question is it not going to overlap, what some of these qualifications are that are actually your accomplishments as well?
No, because your accomplishments, remember, are identifiable, specific, or quantifiable, whereas your summary of qualifications are the skills and talents that it takes to achieve those accomplishments. So you wouldn't say up above, negotiated 25 deals in 1 year. You would say accomplished deal negotiator who has opened markets overseas. And then down below, you would say researched and closed 25 deals to bring in $1.5 million in 1 year. So you see how one up above is the skills, saying that you're an accomplished deal negotiator, and then down below you have the specific accomplishment that reflects it. So now they know, okay, if this is a person who closed 25 deals in 1 year, yeah, they have to be an accomplished deal negotiator.
Okay, I see now. Thank you.
Yeah. So it's very subtle. These are good questions because it is just this subtle, but again, most people don't do this. So when you take the time to really do it this way, it's the difference between reading a book and a piece of fine literature, or a work of fine literature. It just draws you in, and all of a sudden you're like, this is amazing, versus a book that just kind of got thrown out there.
Right, okay.
Okay, and that's the psychology that you're playing with. And those are the kinds of things that really do bring results. The person in one of the courses that I taught that did this for their resume, and they emailed me, and they're like, oh my God, I got a call back right away. Because these are the kinds of things that when you pull it out and do it this way, and you're targeted about where you're heading, the other side says, this is the person that I need to speak to. They respond quickly because, again, it's so targeted for what they need, and it's so clear how you can help them that they feel they absolutely have to speak to you.
Okay. Yeah,
okay.
Makes sense.
Okay. Any other questions? We have time for maybe one more question.
I can't think of any.
Okay.
Okay.